what we're saying is a company should have an information security policy, and they should, in their policy, specifically talk about identity theft and phishing,
mm-hmm.
and then obviously then they should periodically review their policy.
Yeah.
So what I need to know is, in a company, in your company, do you have a policy, and is it being reviewed?
Okay. Well, okay, it's a general thing, anything phishing or not, I mean, it's a security world, you need to have that kind of cycle of improve, what is it, there's a circle.
Plan, do, check.
Yeah, but it's not that, it's related to security, but it's like test, improve, check or something like that, and you're going to keep going around. So it's a never-ending cycle of watching out for security risks, I suppose, and trying to protect yourself. So in our company, yes, we do have a policy regarding security, and it is based on that kind of theory. There's a Microsoft guy who wrote a book which we pretty much based everything on from a security perspective, and that's included in here in this policy, number one, and that whole sort of cycle of continuous improvement and testing.
Okay.
So yes.
Okay.
In short.
And then the review?
The review is pretty much, it's not like a formal thing every quarter or something, but as sort of people owning the role of security or the ownership of security for the company, periodically subscribe to information or acquire up-to-date information from the markets in different ways. And as new threats or vulnerabilities or potential of those are uncovered, it's kind of that owner's responsibility to make sure that we're covered for them. So that would be a review.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reviewing, am I covered for those type of things? And yes or no, you aren't, and then you do something if you're not.
Okay. And when you say owners?
Well, I mean,
like the different parts of the business.
Different parts of the business. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about IT security stuff here, then that ownership is mine.
Okay.
So I'm sort of responsible to keep up to date with the market or what's in the world, say the market, in terms of security problems, vulnerabilities or whatever, or perhaps proactive things that vendors or whatever are doing in anticipation of vulnerabilities.
Okay. Okay, so it is being it's been done. Okay. So that was section one. Okay.
Do you want me to talk like a lot about it, or you just want like a yes and no answer?
I mean,
I feel like I'm just saying yes, no. It sounds like I could be saying that. I might be talking shit. I mean, that's really what I'm...
No, I need to know yes and no, and then obviously the context.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, malware protection.
Yeah, what we're talking about, organization information.
The review.
Yeah, we've done that.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's the organization of the information security. The way the document is structured is that the policy, the ISO policy, says these are the controls that should be in place.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did was I said these would be the type of threats affecting those controls.
Yeah.
And this would be the type of action you would take.
Yeah.
So then in mm-hmm. your company, would you have a process, you know, for authorizing new information processing facilities?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just take the situation for malware, because you put that malware-based phishing.
Yeah.
Malware is a couple of years old now, or since it became popular.
Mm-hmm.
And like the antivirus vendors are quite good at, you know, bringing out new versions with protection for new things like malware or whatever. But what we find is, particularly with something like that, we have antivirus software and we have protection on our perimeter with IPS and things, all kinds of things like that. But they kind of miss out, like USB devices or something in the market which is growing, like PDAs or that type of thing. So then you have to get third party or fourth party, if you like, products to cover things in different ways.
Okay.
It's not necessarily a security product, or it's not necessarily an antivirus or anti-malware product.
Yes.
It's a thing that controls the access to your network by things like this.
Okay.
And then you choose what you let to come off this into your network. So you're obviously doing it with the malware or the threat vulnerability kind of thing in mind, but it's really just an endpoint management process rather than a security process. It just, you use it for security.
Okay.
Being, you know, those kind of threats.
Okay.
Phishing attacks, I mean, direct phishing attacks by email or whatever, that's a little bit different, because you know, it's a single thing like an email. It's not a PDA and a USB key and a camera and, you know, all those pluggable devices that people have nowadays. So, we have phishing protection through mail security products and other perimeter protection products as well.
So you have that in place. Then contact with special interest groups.
Like I said earlier, for the other things, staying in touch with the market and the industry, what's out there. Email news groups and some of them are quite common, quite popular nowadays. There's that. There's also even, you know, traditional type of magazines, literature, and seminars and things like that.
Just the personal contacts.
Networking,
Information security awareness, education, training. That's for for employees. Mm-hmm. So do you have formal education and training?
We don't really train our employees about sort of network security. When our employees are just paper pushing clerical type employees, the vast majority of them. They're kind of computer systems are just there for them to use. They're not like an IT company or something where people are more technically illiterate. So outside of IT, they're not kind of educated about it at all. Or even within IT where it's not their purpose. However there is strong policies governing the way they should act with regard to the tools that they're giving, like computers. And like I alluded to just now, you buy a product that manages the endpoint, so they can't bring their camera from home, plug into their PC and bring a lot of viruses that they don't even know they had, you know what I mean? But they just want the photos.
But do they know why they can't plug it in?
Not necessarily in too much detail, but it's for security reasons. We don't allow this, and that's not permitted. Sometimes analogies are kind of given. Whereas you don't bring your personal vehicle to the office or whatever, you don't bring your personal computer, I don't know, when I say computer, I mean camera or whatever it is, to the office and, you know, expect it to sort of be used in the office environment the same as you don't bring your other personal items to the office and expect them to be used. They're two separate things. For the reasons of security in this case, it's explained like that,
And is it effective? They abide by it?
I'd say it's effective, yes, in that we haven't had any attacks or anything get through,
Okay, that's good.
It's not the kind of thing you switch on. It's you switch it on and you got to, like, make sure it's always working, kind of, you know.
Okay. Controls against malicious code. We're talking about plugging in devices.
This is a checking of electronic email. We have that. I don't know if you want too much technical detail, but we have multiple layers of email protection, protection against email attacks. Just because it seems that no single solution can detect and do everything. So we have multiple layers in various places along the route to us and out of us as well. So we obviously don't pass anything on if we do happen to get something, we hope. Procedures, really clicking information, subscribing or manning this. Yeah, that's kind of what we talked about already. Checking on any files, optical. Absolutely. Every single host has protection on it. Every single route into the network has protection in a line in it. And like I said, even the endpoints that we're trying to cover, like PDAs and all type of stuff, we limit the type of files and go in either direction. So like executable files, for example, can't come from an endpoint part of us, a USB key or a camera or something. A picture or something can, but not executable type file in that direction. So you kind of limit the potential for something to get in there that's bad.
Mobile code. By mobile code, how they define mobile as software that transfers from one computer to another. So it's like ActiveX controls and
something.
Just blocking the use of that and automatically installing itself.
We don't have too much of that, I'm afraid. And I suppose there's a valid business reason. We have applications which use ActiveX controls
yeah.
in their displays and stuff. So we kind of have to have quite a lax security policy around those at the moment. It will change with later technology as we redevelop applications that don't have all that client-side stuff, but at the moment we have them, and yeah, we cannot remove something like ActiveX,
okay.
I'm afraid. It is a... I'll give you a little sketch that I often use. I don't know, you may have seen it if you're looking at security things. There's this cost-effective triangle. Well, it's a triangle of cost-effective versus usable versus secure. And the rule is you can only ever have two of those.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, you can have a very expensive secure and usable network. Mm. For example, like that ActiveX thing, we could employ a contracted development company to come and big bang rewrite the code that uses those ActiveX controls. We would no longer have them. It would cost us a fortune, so we lose that. We're kind of there with the ActiveX side.
Yeah.
Okay. Outside of that, we kind of got a balance of all the three. I mean, I suppose we're kind of there because mm-hmm. we've had to pay for what we've got, so yeah. nothing's for free, but we hope we've done it in an efficient way.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you've got all the other controls in place.
Yeah.
So you're mitigating that
yeah.
risk.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you just chop that out, then it's great, you know, the usability, but obviously business is there for another purpose.
Yes, to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Network security management, network controls. Yeah, looking at the data coming over the network.
Mm-hmm.
I'm presuming you were talking about having the various layers.
No.
No, wait. Oh, no, that's different. This is 6, that's 8. Okay, here, okay, so it's just the network coming over. Oh, it's just the data coming over mm-hmm. the network.
Okay, within our own network, we kind of believe that there's no sort of threat. I suppose
once you're
inside the network, so we've concentrated a lot on the perimeter. The reason for that is we have some kind of physical security where only authorized trusted computers can be on our network.
Yeah.
Okay. Whether it's wireless, whether it's physical, we kind of don't believe that there's untrusted computers there. On the perimeter, though, where a lot of this IP spoofing and data theft and stuff typically comes from.
Yeah.
We do have multiple layers. You know, we have like traditional firewalls and IPS.
Yeah.
And obviously a strong password policy behind that and encryption of any data going out.
Okay.
If we have sort of regular kind of things that people could pick up on, then we make sure that we're doing that with a really secure kind of set of tools, not just like standard SSL encryption or something, but have something really stronger, like we're sending financial information to the banks or whatever.
Okay.
We make sure it's very, very tight. Typically, the banks are quite insistent on that anyway, as you would imagine, but you know, we obviously toe that line okay. quite comfortably.
Okay, exchange of information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is, actually you were talking about the banks, exchanging yeah. information between yourself and third parties.
Yeah.
Do you have formal policies, procedures in place?
I think it's more pushed down to us from the party we're sending to or receiving from. I wouldn't say we don't have a formal policy in place. We definitely have a formal policy in place where any client data is encrypted,
yeah.
Number one. Number two, if it's going to be a financial transaction that could result out of that information, then it's going to be secured even further.
Yeah.
So that kind of policy is in place. We don't just hope for the best or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know what the words are.
But so any third party that you're going
yeah.
to transact with, there
Absolutely.
Is this...
there's security... All the data is encrypted, and then there's probably further security if it's a transaction-based, you know, information
okay.
exchange. Yeah.
Okay. So, but you're saying it's informal, so it's
well,
agreement rather than.
Yeah. If you said please bring me the policies.
Yeah.
I don't have the formal document.
Okay.
Okay. But
then it's convention the way you
it's
work.
Convention, yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Okay.
I think the requirement is very understood and no compromise type.
It's because you're lucky in your work area, it's the banks, it's financial. Mm-hmm. So
it comes with the territory, yeah.
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 Okay. Electronic messaging.
Okay.
Okay. It's information.
Yeah,
probably protected.
Yeah, it's pretty much protected.
And then, yeah, just with the access from, like, internet cafes and all of that.
Mm. We have very little that we allow, although we do have things over the network, or over the internet. Typically for a smaller user population, and typically those guys are more literate in sort of technology world and aware that there's, you know, there's realistic threats that people could take. So it's a bit of a more manageable bunch of guys that have that limited access.
Okay. So it is in place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Electronic commerce.
We do very little of that at the moment. What we have is kind of clients can get their information statements and tax certificates and things online.
Clients as in people that have that are clients dealing with brokers?
No, I'm talking about clients. Somebody who has a home loan with us, for example.
Okay.
But that's kind of where it stops. There's no withdrawals or anything like that. Everything comes into non-technology kind of conventional process outside of that.
Okay.
The guy may obviously have his loan statement or whatever from the net, but he'd have to contact us in person to request a further loan, for example, you know, something resulting in more money changing hands. So although we have e-commerce, we have a very light e-commerce outside of, you know, internal network.
Yeah.
I mean, I see the e-commerce to be an external party to internal party type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So do we say, you say light, so it's yes light? So you have
yeah, we say yes, but little. Yeah.
Yes, little. Okay.
I mean, what we do is, as explained already, all encrypted, even though it's sensitive information, but not necessarily financially threatening information to anyone.
Yeah.
Still, it's aqua caution everywhere. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. Online transactions.
We don't have any of those.
Publicly available information. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you were saying that's all encrypted and all of that.
With logons and all that type of stuff. Yeah.
Monitoring. It's pretty much audit logging, monitoring system use, protection of...
Yeah, we have, let's call it real-time monitoring that raises an alert if a threat is attempted, even if it's blocked, it still notifies us.
Okay.
We have regular external auditors that come in and review security at a technical level and management controls that are in place around it.
And then... What they were talking about there was, you know, when people log into system, log out, change files, update stuff, all of that.
We have auditing on object changes, failures and success.
And then can they monitor the monitoring system use so that people are on, out, logged in, working?
We record all of that and we have ability to report on it.
Okay.
However, it's... Who needs it will only do that. Will only ask for it on request. We don't analyze on a regular basis.
Yes.
People are logging on at 7 o'clock at night while they're doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then that information that's been logged could be used. Needs to be protected. So I mean the logs are in a secure.
It's secure place. Yeah, it's limited access and so on. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
User responsibilities, password usage.
Mm-hmm.
Users shall be required to follow good security practices in the selection and use of passwords.
Yeah. We have a strong password policy. I mean, a little bit about our business is that we are rated by what we call rating agencies,
yeah.
who basically give us a score of how good our management skills are of the financial side of a business, from a business perspective. But although that's all financial kind of rating, these external auditors come in and give us a score against our security and our management controls and all that type of stuff. And that contributes to that rating.
Okay.
So the value of what we call our paper in the market goes up or down depending on whether we have a good policy in place regarding security. So we have very tight security policy in place at a user account level, being strong passwords, changing frequently, special characters enforced, the length of them, no sharing of your colleagues' password with yourself or vice versa, all those type of things and rules are in place. It contributes directly to the bottom line of our business. Yeah.
It's good incentive.
Yeah. It's good. It makes it easy to justify as well, because it's just like IT guy wants me to change my password, why is it so difficult? But I mean, it actually isn't for that. It's for the rating agency to rate the value of us higher. Yeah.
Okay. Unattended user equipment. Yeah, like locking your PC when you walk away and logging off and terminating.
As part of this policy.
Okay.
Sessions are locked within 8 minutes.
Locked or do you?
Within 8 minutes of inactivity, they lock, like a screen lock.
Yeah.
Every night, everything gets shut down and restarted on its own. Great. So that if you're still logged on, you no longer will be the next morning.
Oh.
So somebody couldn't come in and potentially get around it now. Obviously, there's physical security on the doors, there's cameras, and there's all that type of physical stuff as well, which is non-IT, but I mean, it's there as a contribution to it.
Okay. Network routing control. Routing controls should be implemented for networks to ensure computer connection information flows don't breach the access control policy of the business application.
Yeah, it's kind of just like a perimeter level thing. What's allowed to come in and what's allowed to come out. So, yes, we have that very restricted group of people who can modify that.
Okay.
We make a copy of firewall configs for backup purposes, as well, we need to restore it, but also for changes. So we can always go back and see who did what when, and then hold them responsible, I suppose, if they are malicious.
Okay. Secure logon procedures.
It's kind of all built into the Active Directory and all that type of thing. Limit the number of unsuccessful logons. Yeah, all of that is all in the account policy. Three accounts. Or three blog on attention, you're out. We must have management requests to unlock it. It's not like anybody can phone.
Oh.
Okay. If your manager's not around, then we say you can go to another manager, but that's it. You know what I mean? We have to have a bunch of people who we contact. You can't just.
Okay.
Because anybody can pick up the phone and say, I'm Mr. Smith.
Yes.
And I've locked my account. Yeah.
That's a common example.
Mm.
Okay. User identification, authentication. Unique user ID.
Correct, they all have that, yeah. Personal and named.
Session timeouts.
Yep.
You said you
have that, 8 minutes.
Five, six. Oh, limitation of connection time. How long a session can last?
Within our applications, our business applications, we have timeouts. If they open it on the screen.
Yeah.
That particular application, and they work on the email, for example. Mm-hmm. So their screen won't block, but the application will time out 30 minutes from that last mouse click.
Okay.
Okay. That's across all our business applications.
Okay. Mobile computing and communications.
Mm-hmm. We have a stronger kind of policy on those devices, on like notebooks and so on, that we're responsible for. Like I talked about earlier, the endpoint devices.
Mm-hmm.
The file types and so on are much more restrictive. From what's allowed to come and go on those machines.
Yeah.
We don't have we have a policy where data is not allowed to be stored on any computer. It's all got to be like on a server.
Yeah.
Okay. Any data that is like stored when you're in an offline mode is encrypted via a group policy, if you know what that is, an Active Directory.
Yeah.
It's automatically pushed down. They don't have a choice. It's just if they are synchronizing their server drive to their PC, their notebook being out of the office, whatever, it's encrypted as it's done that.
Okay.
They can't change that. Okay, they don't have the level on that PC to change it. What else do we have? There's standard antivirus and all that type of stuff that's on every PC anyway. So it's just as an encryption enhancement.
Okay. And things like making people aware of the risks of using mobile computing and...
Yeah, I mean, the group that uses them are more computer literate, but we haven't had a formal kind of process where we educate them. This is the latest bunch of threats out there, so what should we look out for?
Maybe not that, but you know, if you're sitting in an internet cafe and you're on a wireless network and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that we haven't done either. The guys that we're dealing with, it's probably not a bad thing, but the guys that we're dealing with would be under the belief that IT is responsible for this computer that he uses, and they must make sure that it's impenetrable to anything out there, you know what I mean? Which obviously is ideal, but we can only do so much, and even less when the guy is out of our kind of hold, like in a web cafe or something. So yeah, we try. But there's no education, it would be in one ear and out the other, I'm afraid.
Teleworking, or that's talking about people that work outside. Like, I don't know if you have people that work from home.
No, we have offices remotely, but that's still our premises.
Oh, those are like satellite offices.
Yeah, but it's still like a premise with locked doors and, you know, secured network and so on. Authorized computers only. And you can't even bring in your printer and plug it in there if it's not authorized.
Okay, so that doesn't apply. Okay, policy on the use of cryptographic controls, use of encryption. I'm not sure why you need policy, to be honest. I don't know whether it's a legal thing.
It might be. Again, we don't have like a formal policy that says we must have that, but it's just anything that's client information being shared or leaving our organization for any purpose is encrypted.
Okay.
It's just it's kind of a rule, you know what I mean? It's, you know.
Okay. And then information leakage.
Yeah. I'd like to believe that we have these things covered. I mean, you're probably aware that there's a rule in IT that 80% of the information theft that you have is done by your own people.
Yeah.
And that's a lot harder to tie down. Typically it's reactive, where you suspect something when the person's doing it and you have to look and see if he is. Often without him knowing, and then obviously then take him to court or whatever. If he has been, you can't prevent it unless you prevent him doing his job, I suppose.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a catch-22.
Okay, so it's...
So it's there from this aspect.
Yeah.
But if somebody really wants to steal the information, they'll end up being an employee one way or another, and they'll do it, you know what I mean? There's many examples in the world of people who've got a job at a bank, and 4 years later you actually find out that the guy has been part of a syndicate, that they've been working on a system for 4 years to, you know, extort money out of a bank or whatever. Yeah, I mean, it happens. You can't believe it, but it happens, yeah.
Wow.
All as an internal employee, it doesn't matter how much kind of
malware
or Trojans or whatever you protect against, he's there. He's inside. There as a person, not a technology. He's working within the system.
That's true.
It's scary, yeah, but it happens at all these banks and stuff, yeah.
Okay, control of technical vulnerabilities. Timely information about technical vulnerabilities shall be used to obtain.
Yeah, like I say, we have regular audits, which is like the formal kind of process, and other security type sources of information.
Okay, that's covered. Incident management, reporting of security events.
Yeah, I mean, we have an occasion where, I mean, we haven't had many, but things have been stolen or whatever, and there's some suspicion out there, and yeah, it's reported and it's investigated. We have forensics. Yeah, we have an internal forensics team.
Okay.
That look into all of these things. Obviously, I don't know too much about what they do, but they are skilled and specialized in that area.
Is it separate from the IT department?
Very separate. Very separate, yeah. Separate in fact that they sit in a closed office and you can't get in there unless you're one of them or you have a key, and the Aravanians have the key. So it's like internal scorpions. Or it's because we're financial. We have to carry that. You know what I mean? We have to make sure that those things are in place. So any suspicion things are going on, there's a team capable of investigating it and preventing it if it's going to happen. You know, it's people's money we're dealing with. So it's corporate governance.
I didn't know that. That's good. Okay, so it's reporting events, reporting security weaknesses.
Yeah. Likewise, if they find anything or whatever, then you know, tasks will be undertaken to prevent it, close it.
Okay. Do employees know they suspect something, and would they know what to do if they?
If they suspect something, yes, they would report it. Typically, it's the line management, I suppose, but then it would go to forensics, I would think. It may come to IT, depending what it is. You know, if it's IT, glaringly obvious IT thing, then it would probably come to me. Or go straight to forensics via management.
Okay. Compliance and legal requirements,
mm-hmm.
data protection and privacy of personal information. I don't know what the legislation is in our country,
mm-hmm.
But you're dealing with people's personal information.
Correct.
I should actually find out what the South African legal requirement is. That information, obviously, you know, you can't.
We don't share it. We don't sell it. All that type of stuff. I think when people sign documents to become a customer, we obviously undertake not to share their private information with anyone unless they authorize it. Pretty much. You think it's a given, but I think you have to state it, and I'm pretty sure we do.
Yeah, it must be in all the contracts.
Mm.
I lost my place. Reporting.
Data protection. Data
protection. Compliance and security policies and standards. That's managers to ensure that employees comply.
Outside of IT, I mean, it's IT's responsibility. So at an end user level, even the management just expect IT to take care of it.
Oh.
So, yeah, there's nothing outside of IT.
Interesting. Because a lot of the books will say, you know, we're all in this together.
Yeah, holistic approach.
Top down, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I think they would condone anything we did for those reasons, but, and maybe it's wrong, the responsibility, I think, is, they say it's IT's, you know what I mean? This is a computer, I use it for my job, whatever.
Yeah.
But the security of the information and everything else, I mean, I can't do anything about that. I'll just use it like they tell me to use it, sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Technical compliance checking. Okay. Just checking.
Yes, that's definitely,
And that was it.
Is that it?
That was it.
That was easy. Okay.
unless there was A and other, I have a general comment section. Anything else you think that needs to be in there? The premise is, there's two.
Mm.
It's either if you were a company with nothing in place and you wanted to put something in place to protect against this, and you put all of this in place, would that be enough? Or if you have existing policy and you wanted to see, are there any holes in your system?
We'll work through this. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely gaps because I said we haven't got things. You know what I mean? And we have things like ActiveX or whatever that are also weaknesses in a secure system or totally secure system. So is it enough? What I've answered yes to? Yes, I think so. I mean, until you're proved otherwise, then you're kind of okay. If you followed this to the letter, like you say, if you were totally greenfields and you didn't have it, I think you'd do pretty well. I mean, I don't think you can do a hell of a lot less though than what's stated here, because there's just so many vulnerabilities nowadays. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's a very serious problem, overhead or whatever, that we have to deal with. Yeah. Unfortunately, but that's the way of the world. I mean, there's a new area in the world where crime can take place, and that's e-commerce based areas.
keeps us in jobs as well.
Yeah, I know, but it's just, you know, 50 years ago we didn't have it, and I think prevention is maybe better than cure. All we're doing is a whole set of cures all the time,
yes.
You know, which is not nice when it's just for no real purpose. It's not productive, is it?
Yes.
It's just protecting against people who want to steal.